This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
If you hate Fresno so much, why'd you come back?
Obviously, because I've made a series of poor life decisions.
I thought you were, like, teaching at that fancy pants school.
I was, but then I got fired because I fucked a bunch of people.
My sister's back, and I just let her stay at my place. Got her this job. She's still fragile.
I'm a sex addict.
That's a thing? I thought it was, like, made up by Tiger Woods or something.
My life is pretty sweet.
You're a maid in Fresno.
My sister's a liar. She's selfish. She's ungrateful. And she can't get her life together.
Did I just kill someone?
Is anyone here a doctor?
I'm a doctor.
Whoops.
You killed an Olympian.
Only if you consider hammer throw a sport, which...
You're a sociopath.
You deserve some dignity. Everyone deserves some dignity.
We want $25,000 to get out of this butt crack.
There's no way we can come up with $25,000 in 3 days.
We're in Fresno.
I need you to come over here right now and open this cash register, and I need all the cash now.
Whose great idea was it to rob a sex shop?
What a stupid-ass idea.
Beep. Y'all ready for this? Woo!
But I'm a cheerleader. Everyone knows that. Straight, bent, queer, gay, whatever. That film.
I absolutely consider myself a feminist, and of course I think it's important to for men and women to have equality, and that's to me what the definition of a feminist is. And I feel like it's important for myself as an artist to kind of put blinders on to the obstacles in front of me and just move forward.
Yes.
Because I think if you just focus on all the obstacles, it's easy to get slower in pursuing your goals.
So I'm pretty excited to speak to you, Jamie Babbitt.
Great. I'm very happy to be here.
And also with your fabulous film, its premiere is very soon here in Melbourne, Addicted to Fresno.
I had a lot of fun making the movie, and I hope people laugh a lot and enjoy it.
Me too. It's at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. It's only got one screening. I'm hoping that it will be so popular that there will be, you know, rapturous encores to have it screened again during the festival.
Great.
Cross fingers. Jamie Babbitt, what can you tell us just briefly for those who don't know about the film, what it's about?
The movie Addicted to Fresno is a comedy, and it's about two sisters, and one sister is gay and not really dealing with her love life. She's in love with a straight girl. She has this wonderful training teacher that's hitting on her, played by Aubrey Plaza. But because she's so wrapped up in kind of pining for the straight girl and also taking care of her sister, who's kind of a mess, she's not really paying attention to this very available, lovely Aubrey Plaza, who is ready and available to be her girlfriend. So that's kind of the gist of it. The main thrust of the story is the two sisters, and one of the sisters, played by Judy Greer, is a real troublemaker, and she is sleeping with lots of different people and causing lots of havoc, and the lesbian sister is sort of trying to hold her together.
Yes, it's got a lot of those sort of your signature dynamics, and that is, you know, looking at those relationships. The sisters themselves, played, you know, as you said, awesomely by Judy Greer and Natasha Lyon, look, they don't seem to be like chalk and cheese, you know, they don't really seem to gel, but they've got that strength between them that you see later in the film, without spoiling it too much. And Judy's registered sex offender. So that's almost immediately your style, I think, that audiences will be familiar to. It sort of throws it in your face and you go, whoa, okay, a woman who's a sex offender. Where did you come up with that idea for the character?
I came up for the Judy Greer character was based on my grandmother, and I had heard a lot of stories growing up from my mother just about growing up with in a family where someone's kind of out of control sexually. And that was my grandmother.
Okay. Wow.
She was married six times.
Woo.
In the 50s where she was, you know, marrying man after man after man after man, it was just known as kind of a, you know, sexually, you know, avant-garde woman. But I think today they call it sex addict. but yeah, it was basically based on my grandmother. And my mother just was always trying to kind of control her mother. And even when she was a child, she was more like the mother, and her mother was more like the child. So I kind of wanted to talk about that dynamic, but make it between two sisters. So it's just about, you know, this woman who really doesn't have a lot going on in her life, Judy Greer. She's working as a maid at a hotel. She's just had a lot of downs in her life. But the one thing that kind of gets her off is hooking up with guys left and right. Basically, it's been kind of really hurting her life. She's working out of school, and she had sex with one of the other teachers, and all the kids saw it, and so that's how she became a sex offender.
Yeah.
So she's basically, her life is a mess, and the lesbian sister is trying to help her.
Yeah,
it's a comedy, guys.
It is a comedy. That's right. And that's the sort of wonderful mix of characters you have. I love the scene. I've seen, of course, Jessica St. Clair as Kristen, who is a reception woman at the motel, the sort of sleazy kind of hotel motel where they are maids. And great little scene there before they get into the lift about how Judy has, you know, had some intimate moments with a boyfriend of that character. So, yeah, some of the many different very funny faux pas. And you know, the Judy Greer character, Shannon, she just doesn't give a shit, does she? She really doesn't.
No, she doesn't. I mean, one of the things I loved about my grandmother is she really didn't give a shit. And she also loved to laugh about everything. And even though sometimes what she did was wildly inappropriate, I think it really helped shape me as a filmmaker that I really like making comedies about crazy situations, and I'm not afraid to make fun of things that are kind of dark material.
And, you know, kind of considered pretty serious with issues of rape and you know, people, you know, dying and the inappropriateness of what you do with them and the bodies and so on. So it's got that real black sort of humor. I think it almost feels like this is your darkest yet in some respects.
I can't really tell about my own work what's dark and what's not, but I definitely, you know, when I made Itty Bitty Titty Committee, my film right after But I'm a Cheerleader, people told me that was dark because they blew up, like, you know, the Washington Monument. This is before 9/11, and that was a comedy, so I don't know. There's no explosions in this one. It's more just, like, explosions of the personal nature, but, you know, one of my favorite dark comedies about sisters is Sweetie, the Jane Campion movie. So I've always been interested in making a dark comedy about sisters.
I remember the first time I saw Sweetie by Jane Campion. It was sort of like a rites of passage for women, of girls, for friends to get together and watch it and just be sitting, you know, you'd watch everyone's face who hadn't seen it and their jaw drop. What the hell was that? And at the same time laughing when you shouldn't be laughing at this. But amazing. Yeah, amazing piece of work. Now,
I have two daughters, and so I often think about the joy or disdain that they'll have for watching my sister movie when they get older. But I definitely learn a lot from watching the way those two sisters interact as well.
Yeah. Yes, there's also, the sisters concept is amazing. Have you seen the Korean film called Sisters? It's more horror.
I have not. Is it great?
It's bloody.
Okay.
It's pretty bloody.
Okay.
And some awkward moments, but I think it's got those family moments that everyone, no matter where you are in the world, you can relate to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, looking at this amazing career, you know, I've had people almost scratching at me since they heard that I was going to be talking to you, because look at this, But I'm a Cheerleader. Everyone knows that. Straight, bent, queer, gay, whatever. That film. What can you tell us about it, just briefly?
Well, But I'm a Cheerleader was such a fun movie to make. It was my first time working with Natasha Lyonne, who is so funny and charming and hilarious. And she was in actual life very close friends with Clea Duvall. So I was very lucky to have a really special dynamic between both Clea Duvall and Natasha Lyonne. So I was excited to bring them back to Addicted to Fresno. They're both in Addicted to Fresno
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was 27 when I made that movie, and I was living in a little small town outside of L.A. in this really crappy hotel with all those crazy actors, Kathy Moriarty.
Oh, wonderful, yeah.
Harold from Harold and Maude, Bud Cort, Natasha Lyonne, Clea. We were all living in this hotel, so most of my memories of making the movie are just trying to be the parent to all of these insane actors and wondering what had gone wrong in my life to that moment.
Oh, it sounds like you should have just had the camera rolling on that. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. I just kept the camera rolling, and we did have a movie to cut together. But no, it was awesome. And I was very lucky to meet Natasha at that time, meet Clea Duvall, and still they're all very good friends. And so that movie is a real tribute to the beginning of our friendship.
Yeah, the wonderful scene, Addicted to Fresno, just a little spoily bit, with Clea Duvall turning up and the dildos. Awesome.
Yes, always the dildos.
Who came out with the dildos in the movie? The idea of a shopping cart full.
It was, hundreds and hundreds of dildos that we needed to get, which was a fun request for the art department. Hey, can you get us hundreds of dildos? But luckily, the art director is this awesome woman who said, I have a connection for a dildo manufacturer. That'll be fine. Mm. No idea how she had that connection. And so they actually gave us the hundreds of purple dildos for free. And they just asked that at the end of the shoot, we give them back to the company because they wanted to melt them down and make more dildos out of them.
Wow.
So the recycled dildos from Addicted to Fresno are available in stores.
Wow, okay. It's a bit like Madeleine Olnick's the Merkins. You know, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting, great. And fabulous career, too, just looking at the television aspect. You're directing, producing, and writing for stuff such as Gilmore Girls and everything, United States of Tara, looking more recently, Girls, the L Word, for a lot of our listeners will know that, of course. And more recently, Supergirl episode. Oh, that's quite a mix there. What draws you to particular, projects in television?
I am a very interested, curious person. And so once I kind of delve into one genre, I get curious about another genre. So right after I did Addicted to Fresno, this comedy about sisters, I wanted to do something with big special effects and green screen and people flying all over the place. And so my friend Greg Berlanti, who is one of the creators of Supergirl, called and offered me an episode, and I thought, wow, that would be so interesting and fun to do. And it really was. It's a great cast, and it was fun to think about how to shoot, big visual scenes with Supergirl flying all around. And it was a real challenge for me after doing, people talking in a room. I like to switch it up. And after I did Supergirl, I was so exhausted, green screen and putting people up on wires and all the kind of boring stuff about Supergirl, the kind of technical aspects, which get a little tedious at times, that I was super excited. I then did a bunch of episodes of Silicon Valley, and that was also really fun. So, I like to mix it up and keep myself interested.
Yeah, you certainly have. You've been involved in a couple of episodes, one of my favorites, 90210, and Gossip Girl, of course, Ugly Betty and Alias. It just goes on and on. And amazing, You're just...
Well, thank you.
You don't stop.
It's one of the nice things about living in Los Angeles is that there really is movie television industry where there's just a lot of product being made. And so there's a lot of jobs. And I do consider myself very lucky to be able to work in this industry. But it really is like a, factory of stories. And when you walk... Every day when I walk onto the studios and go into a studio that, I was doing Silicon Valley in the same studio that they filmed The Wizard of Oz, you just feel so privileged to be a director. And, back in The Wizard of Oz days, there's no lesbian women in sight directing. So I feel very lucky to be living in this time and to be able to work in the industry.
Yes, that's a very interesting topic, bringing up a queer woman in TV. From the HuffPost, I looked up there. 2013, they did a Queer Voices article about queer women working in television, included yourself. Do you consider yourself a role model? Role model for, say, people who are queer women particularly?
I don't know if I consider myself a role model. If someone wants me to be their role model, I'm happy to play that role. But, you know, some queer artists are not interested in working in the mainstream, which I totally respect also. Yep. And I'm not always interested in working in the mainstream either. I like to do both. But I really enjoy my job, and I really try to tell all the women in my life that, you know, that if they want to get into it, I'm happy to help them. So I've really tried to make an effort to let other women directors shadow me and just kind of understand the way the television industry works so that we can get more women in there, because I don't want to be the only one. And the industry will only be better the more women that are in it. It just needs balance.
Do you think it is harder for women still, or how is it looking in Los Angeles and Hollywood in your eyes?
I think it's absolutely harder to break into the film and television industry, just like it's hard for women to break into any industry that pays really well and is really fun. It's never been hard for women to get into social work, which doesn't pay well, or housekeeping, which doesn't pay well, or all those jobs that don't pay well and are not fun are really easy for women to get into. But I think, you know, men don't want to give up the job because it's a great job. It pays really well. It's super creative. It's really fun. And it's just a pleasure to go to work. So it's just so highly competitive. And although there's been 1,000 articles written about the lack of diversity at the top, people just don't want to give those jobs to people who are starting out.
Right.
To minorities, to women, because they don't want to give them a chance because they want the job because it's a great job.
Yeah, competition.
So it's just insane, yeah. So I really, you know, try to encourage women to just get super aggressive because it's, you know, you have to kind of really, first of all, you have to get really lucky, which I did very early in my career. I made Bun a cheerleader, and then I got an interview with Ryan Murphy, who created Glee.
Yes.
And that was actually my first TV interview. And I went into the interview. He actually had not seen Bun a cheerleader, but he knew that I had done this queer film, and we just kind of bonded. He had never worked in TV. I had never worked in TV. And he said, hey, you know, I'd like to work with you because you have good energy, and I'd like to work with someone who's new like me. And so he told the TV executives, hey, I want to hire this lady. And the TV executive said, absolutely not. She does not have any TV experience.
Oh.
No way. We will not hire her. And because Ryan is a diva and very demanding, even before he had any success, he said, well, you know, if you're not going to hire her, then I'm quitting. So this is who I want to hire, and you guys have to listen to me.
Wow.
So they said, okay. So, you know, he is a strong personality who gets things done. And once I had that lucky moment where someone gave me my first shot, then I did a great job. So I ended up directing 6 episodes of his first TV series called Popular. And once I had 6 TV shows on my resume, I was able to kind of work nonstop. So it's really just about that first chance, and you have to get lucky and find someone who's a big enough diva that they'll push it through.
Yeah.
So I hope to be that person and push a lot of people through.
So are you a diva? Do you consider yourself you're at that position, or don't you have to do that?
I don't think I'm a diva. I actually don't think Ryan's a diva either, but I think, like Ryan, I think I can be extremely pushy. But I think you have to be a pushy person in order to be a director, because the bread and butter of a director is being a leader. And there's certain times where you really have to push things through because you know they're the right thing.
Yeah, you have to lead. And hopefully everyone will follow. See your dream and follow it. And you've had such a dream, you know. And I've had a lot of people say to me, oh, Gilmore Girls, oh my God, what do you think? But what do you think of it being explored again as a new series?
I am super excited to see the new Gilmore Girls episodes on Netflix. They're making it just down the street from me. A lot of my friends are the actors on the movie, or the actor on the show. So I've heard a lot of updates about what's going on over there, and I think it's going to be great. Amy Sherman-Palladino, the writer creator who's now directing most of the episodes with her husband, is so talented and so much creative juice left in her for those characters. So I really think, unlike a lot of reboots where the quality goes down,
yes,
I actually think the quality will be extremely high, in the same way that, like, David Lynch doing his more episodes that he's doing of his show. I feel like the person who really was the creative center of that show has taken on the reboot, and she has so much to say, and I actually think it's going to be great.
Yeah, cool. Are you be involved in it, apart from being a neighbor? Do you think you...
I'm a friend. Okay. No, Amy is directing almost all of them, and her husband is directing the few she's not. So, but I, of course, would if they wanted me to, because I love the series.
Yeah. Just for the feminist aspect for our show, how important do you think it is to be a feminist, and do you consider yourself one?
I absolutely consider myself a feminist, and of course I think it's important to for men and women to have equality, and that's, to me, what the definition of a feminist is, and I feel like it's important for myself as an artist to kind of put blinders on to the obstacles in front of me and just move forward, because I think if you just focus on all the obstacles, it's easy to get slower in pursuing your goals. So I feel like at a certain point, you do have to kind of put blinders on and just push yourself in. But at the same time, I absolutely, absolutely consider myself a feminist and try to, you know, do everything I can to make things better for the next generation.
And it's great that you also include queer female characters too. That's important. Is that something you'll continue with, I guess, in your work?
I'm sure I'll continue, yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily a political mandate for myself to have queer characters in my work. I just actually am interested in queer characters because I am a queer person, and I want to tell stories about my life and people that I see and people that I know and about myself. So I feel like if I'm telling any story that's worthwhile, it's probably going to be a queer story in my case, just because that's the stories that I'm living.
And for you, I guess, also same-sex equality and equality in marriage, that's been really essential. Do you feel we don't have it yet in Australia? That's one of the big issues for us at the moment.
I think same-sex equality and marriage equality, I was sort of mixed feelings on it, because I feel like there is something nice about not being the paradigm of heterosexuality, and there's so many of my straight friends that have so many problems with marriage, and you know, in many ways I thought, why are we trying to get something that's like a flawtution and on its way out anyway? But I will say that now that I have children, and I have two young children, I think marriage equality is absolutely necessary. Because if you don't have the legal protection that any other married couple has, there are so many ways for your children to be discriminated against. And the court battle that happened last year, last summer, that eventually ended up having nationwide marriage equality was really truly centered around the one Supreme Court justice who was the swing vote saying, you know what about all the children of gay people, and are we really going to exclude them from all of the protections that marriage has for children? And he said, you know what, it's just not fair to all those kids. And I absolutely agree with him. As far as my feelings about marriage, emotionally, you know, any marriage is hard, but I will say I'm very happily married as protection for my children, and it's been great to have that peace of mind to know that your family is protected under the law.
Yes, I mean, yeah, and you're famously married too, of course, to talented, wonderful person who's been involved in many classical, what we call classical now, television moments. So, yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
Making it last.
Yeah. Yay.
That's cool. Just before we finish off, Addicted to Fresno once again is playing April 1st, and it's no joke, it is April 1st. It's at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, and one session only at this stage, 8:15pm at ACMI. So Addicted to Fresno is happening for MQFF, and it's by the wonderful woman I'm speaking to now, director Jamie Babbitt. We know her predominantly, I guess, from But I'm a Cheerleader, a great film that came out in 1999. And just briefly, Jamie, did you ever think this would, you know, you'd be doing what you're doing now?
I always wanted to be doing what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, I did kind of think so. I didn't know if I would be able to make it happen, but it was definitely my dream. So I continue to keep trying to make funny gay movies to bring worldwide to the people.
Cool. Now, before I do let you go, I'm really, really grateful that we've been able to have all this time to speak to you. I'm pretty greedy like that. But I wonder if I could get you to do a station ID and a tag for us.
Sure. This is Jamie Babbitt, the director of But I'm a Cheerleader, and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. Well, look, any gossip you can tell us? What are you doing next? Just quickly, before I do let you fly off.
Next thing I'm doing is a show called Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, cool. And will it be Sunny?
Sunny in Philadelphia. Will it be Sunny in Philadelphia? Yeah. It will be. A lot of laughs.
Oh, cool. All right. When's that due to be out? Or is it TV or film?
TV, yeah.
That's TV.
Yeah, and that's it.
Well,
yeah.
Look, you're doing heaps. And thank you so much once again for speaking to us here on Joy 94.9.
Yeah,
Jamie
thank
Babbitt. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Take care. Thanks so much for that. Cheerio.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.